And it has to order about 43 minutes after the hour on the 25th. What is it? My watch says 25th.
25th. All day.
All right. And presently have Senators Green, Elton, Wilkin, and myself, Dyson. We have one order of business before us this morning. That's SB 70. This is the administration's bill having to do with issues related to manufacturer and of controlled substances and the subsequent damages that those might make. When we finished our business, we had two or three things that, at the prerogative of the chair, we recessed or postponed our consideration of this bill to consider them. One of those is before us today is Amendment 1. Senator French has agreed to that and supports the idea of his bill being amended into this one. His bill had to do with adding anabolic steroids to the list of controlled substances, which I understand many jurisdictions have done or are in the process of doing, and fits very closely within the with the title and is virtually in the same section of the code. Crystal, you want to, Senator French is, I think, flying or unavailable, but Crystal was going to, you can just stay there if you want,
okay.
Dean. No, I mean, Crystal, you,
okay,
you come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Crystal Smith, staff to Senator Hollis French, and we really appreciate your considering adding this, our issue into your bill, or to the administration's bill, this bill in front of you. You are correct in that most jurisdictions do. There are 48 states that have anabolic steroids on their list of controlled substances, and only Alaska and Vermont do not at this time. This was brought to our attention actually by some, I think one of the people was a customs agent who mentioned to Hollis that in fact, although anabolic steroids are illegal under federal law, when they get them coming into the state through customs, it's really a small amount, and it's not really relative to the other kinds of things that the customs agents are looking at for drug abuses. They don't. And he told us that in most states they turn those over to state officials for prosecution. But of course they can't do that here because there's nobody prosecuted. I think there's been enough in the papers recently about athletes with anabolic steroid problems that people are really aware of it. It's particularly a bad problem for youth because of the physical and the psychological problems that result from steroid use and then pulling back. A lot of what they call roid rage, which is when it really causes, particularly as I say, young people to go violent, and that's a problem. So I'll be glad to answer any questions. I assume that generally people know that anabolic steroids are not the same as corticosteroids, which people go, well, wait a minute, I had steroids because I had some sort of inflammatory thing. I actually have a shot of corticosteroids in my eye that I had done in December, so I'm walking proof that my eye hasn't gotten bigger, stronger, more androgenic, or anything else.
And you haven't got crabbier?
I have, well, yeah, but it's session, so, you know, I can't tell. And anabolic steroids are used to build body mass and strength, and that's what people think, but they don't know about the downsides of them when they do that. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
And I understand Mr. Dwinelli represents that to me that the administration has no objection to the adding of this. Is that correct, sir?
And I, just to explain exactly what this does, this list of steroids is essentially the federal list that is banned. As Ms. Smith said, it's often difficult to get the federal officials interested in the case if it's a small amount and small under their scale, and this allows the state to do that. I think this particular amendment would classify this as a Schedule 5A controlled substance. What that means is that selling it or possessing a moderate to large amount of it is a Class C felony, which is the lowest level felony. Possessing a small amount of it will only be a misdemeanor, and we think that that's probably appropriate. Therefore, the bodybuilder or the high school student who's got just a small amount That's not a serious offense. We want to go after the people who are actually distributing it. So we think it's classified correctly, and this is an appropriate change to state law.
Are there questions for either? Senator Elton?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, and I don't know an awful lot about this, but and maybe I know just enough to be kind of dangerous. Is there a problem with listing everything? And I'm thinking specifically about the Baltro kind of incident in which you have new versions of the same kind of thing being promoted. And so, I mean, is that covered in F before you get to the list?
Mr. Chairman, it's certainly the intent of the lead-in section in F to take care of those kind of, you know, what they call designer drugs or designer steroids. But you know, smart chemists can you know, may be able to find a way around some of the specific scientific language. And if you draft the statute too broadly, it becomes vague and unenforceable as a result of that. If you draft it too narrowly, they can get around it too easily. We try to hit a middle ground, but you're always trying to follow the designer chemists, and that's why the federal schedule is updated on a fairly routine basis. We're always a little bit behind, and that's okay. I mean, it takes a little while for things to get to Alaska, so we try to cover other compounds that they can make.
Okay, and just maybe for the sake of being formally correct here, would you move this amendment?
Oh, sure. Mr. Chair, I move amendment number one.
I'll object for discussion purposes. Please continue.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And at the beginning on line 7, does Schedule VA, does that tie it to the federal list?
Through the chair, Schedule 5A is Schedule 5, and A stands for Alaska.
Okay.
To distinguish it from the federal. This is actually a Schedule 3 drug under the federal schedule, which means that they have scheduled it a little higher, and their penalties are a little higher. We think that, you know, based on the kind of cases that we would get and we would handle, as opposed to the kind of that the feds would handle, that it's probably correctly classified for our penalty structure.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vannelli, line 19, after the word includes, would it help any with Senator Elton's concern if we inserted the word, make it read, anabolic steroids, including but not limited to the following?
Mr. Chairman, it's our view that includes, or includes but not limited to, really amounts legally to the
same thing.
So this is, I think the language is out.
All right. Is there any other questions? Yes, Senator Green.
Would there, pertaining to the list, be any need to reference if the federal list changes so that we don't have to come back and change our list?
through the chair, Senator Green, there's probably an open question as to whether or not we can simply adopt federal law that is constantly changing. In other words, and particularly when you're in criminal law, where you're criminalizing some conduct that is based on what another body adopts rather than the Alaska legislature, it becomes problematical. So, I mean, our view has been over a number of years that the safest thing is to adopt a specific list if there are new compounds developed, to adopt them specifically under Alaska law. I mean, I think the problem is the Alaska legislature delegating its lawmaking authority to the federal government in matters of crimes, and I think it's just there may be some circumstances where in civil law where that could be appropriate. I think in crimes it becomes difficult to do that.
Good question. All right. Is there any other objection? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any other objection to Amendment 1? Seeing none, Amendment 1 is adopted. Thank you, Crystal, and thank Senator French. I'll move Amendment Number 2. And this is a issue that I brought up with Mr. Guinelli when we last heard this, and maybe you would explain it, sir.
Certainly. This is the concern raised by the chair last time was into the circumstances where someone has drugs but has for their own kept them for their own personal use, not intending that they be distributed in any way, has kept them under a secure situation, and unbeknownst to them, the drugs are stolen or diverted some way, and somebody dies as a result. Is it fair to the question was, is it fair to hold that person to the same level of culpability? I mean, they certainly would be guilty of possessing or manufacturing, but is it fair to hold them the same level of culpability as someone who intends to actually distribute the drug? And so, in light of that, the proposed amendment that I drafted creates an affirmative defense to a prosecution, and an affirmative defense means that this is something that the defendant has to come and prove. It's very difficult for us to prove that the defendant didn't have it for his own personal use, didn't keep it in a locked area. In other words, we'd have to prove a series of negatives, and often the information that the person has, I mean, it's within their control. I mean, they know how they kept it, they know how it was stored, and if they can, I mean, it's a simple matter. If they can show the investigators or the prosecutor that that's the way they did it, I mean, we aren't even going to charge the offense. So, but it's something that an affirmative defense means they have to come forward with, and they have to show us that that's what occurred. And I think, I mean, I certainly tried to draft this in a way that reflected Chairman's concerns, and so there it is.
Senator Elton?
Mr. Shaw, I don't want to sound too hardcore, but what we're doing is we're creating an exception for a person who has illegally manufactured a controlled substance. I mean, it's tough to surmise in these circumstances, but I would imagine they might have big mouths. I mean, especially if they're taking the illegal controlled substance. That would invite another criminal into their home to rob them. And so again, I don't want to sound too hardcore here, but the question in my mind is, are they deserving of that kind of an affirmative defense?
And if I respond, remember what we're talking about here does not excuse them from being charged for the manufacture and possession of the stuff, but if that person that broke in, stole it out of their lockbox, then gives it to somebody who dies, this provision will keep that person who had it locked up and can prove that they did from being charged with manslaughter for the death. Doesn't keep them from being charged for the manufacture and possession. And it's an interesting philosophical question. Is there objection to Amendment 2?
I'll object just for more discussion, but I'd like to ask you a question. Do we have the same provision for other potential dangers where a third party is involved? Say, ownership of a weapon. What else? I guess a vehicle would come in here, but...
Through the chair, there are Senator Green. I recall there are certain provisions within the weapons laws that, I think it may have to do. I can look it up. It would take me a couple minutes, but that it's illegal to possess a firearm on school grounds, unless you have it in a locked container in your trunk. That sort of thing. I mean, so we do have some provisions like that in Alaska law, and I'd have to think about other examples where that might come into play. But in other words, the careful storage and security of something that might otherwise be a problem is taken into account, at least in that context.
Okay, what about in the home? Because we're assuming this is going to be either at the home or the apartment or in the building where it's manufactured or the moving vehicle or whatever it is. But I'm just trying to see, do we have other protections, quote, protections or affirmative defense for? Yeah, other than a crime, though. I mean,
yeah.
Ownership is not a crime, so, okay.
And
particularly with something that's already illegal, to either have it or to manufacture it is, that's...
You kind of get in a quandary here.
You really do. And we've seen in here in Alaska, people have been charged because, or attempted to be charged because they left the keys in their vehicle. Somebody was drunk, came and took it, went down the street, and had a wreck and hurt somebody. And, you know, and there's been attempts to come after the person who left it. Or, the more common one is, load a firearm in a house and kids get a hold of it and discharge it. You know, and so isn't there case law that's telling us that if you've got firearms in your home, you need to take reasonable protections against a child or
something? It's not illegal.
That's true. But your question, you know, was about taking reasonable precautions.
Mr. Chairman, certainly, you know, under civil law, I don't think there's anything in the criminal law that that makes that kind of handling of firearms a crime. There's a general provision about reckless endangerment that if we can show that, you know, firearms or anything were handled so recklessly and as a result somebody was injured, that's a kind of a theoretical possibility. I don't think we've ever pursued that. You know, I think the with illegal drugs, it's an interesting philosophical question. I certainly see the arguments on both sides. You know, I could envision situations where, you know, a drug dealer, let's say a crack house or something like that, I mean, they know that they get ripped off occasionally, and whether they get ripped off for drugs or whether they get ripped off for the cash that they have on the premises, you know, they get ripped off. And so some of them install kind of elaborate security measures just to protect that. Now, I don't know whether that falls under here because they know people are coming to try to rip them off. I mean, does that fit into the did not know or have reason to believe that the controlled substance would be taken? You know, I think if it's a crack house and they say, hey, look, you know, we had all the security. Yeah, you had the security because you knew people were going to be coming. That's a case that I'd probably want to prosecute. I thought the situation that you posited was someone who, you know, out in the valley in you know, nobody knows they've got the drugs. they've got some, you know, some drugs in their safe and it's, you know, for their own private use, and then there's a kind of a burglary that's unrelated and it, you know, the drugs are stolen. I think that's a more rare situation. So it's interesting question.
And that may lead to another question, Mr. Chair. I mean, Dean, you've had extensive experience on the criminal side. I mean, I mean, are there meth manufacturers or crack manufacturers that do it for their own personal use? I mean, my guess is, if there are, there'd be very few of them. They're doing it for a more commercial purpose. And then the second part of that. I can't remember what the second part was now, but it just seems to me that there may, I mean, even without this, there may be a defense for somebody if in that rare instance they were ripped off after having taken elaborate procedures or safety procedures, and if that were the case, I mean, would a DA file charges?
Through the chair. Anytime a prosecutor pursues a case, we always look to its jury appeal. I mean, what's the jury going to do with this? Are they going to laugh us out of court and as a result, you know, acquit on some other unrelated charges? So we're always looking to that. I think the answer to your question, though, is with crack and with meth, particularly, you know, nowadays with meth, we're finding more and more people who actually are making it for their own use. They're selling it as well. I mean, they're making up a batch. They sell part of it to, you know, buy more raw materials, and then they're addicted and they're using it for their own purposes. So we are finding that they do use it for themselves. How they store it, I mean, it's probably in their pocket, more than likely, than anything else.
Senator Green, I blundered into being in the situation that you're referring to. My second year here, I was involved in evaluating firearms in an estate, and one of them happened to be a marble game getter, and it was manufactured in 1916, so over and under 22410. And the federal firearms laws on sawed-off shotguns that were passed in the 30s said, you know, I think it's anything under 18 is a sawed-off shotgun. But when that law went into effect, there was a period at which anybody that had guns like this Marvel Game Getter could apply and get amnesty for it and so on. So I was in a position of trying to find out from BATF whether this particular gun had qualified under the amnesty thing. And the guy in BATF says, we got to be careful here, because if I go look at the list and that gun wasn't there, then it's a felony and you don't want to be a felon. And so we got this elaborate thing with a middleman and so on and so forth. And he called me up and said, gun's illegal. Went right downstairs, took that barrel out, sawed it up on my bandsaw and threw it in a dumpster and got some longer barrels made for it. You know, but for a brief 4.5-5 minutes, you know, I was knowingly had an illegal thing, and of course, if somebody had come and stolen it while it was illegal from my
house. Saying this right in front of you.
You're getting prosecuted, I'm for two things.
Well, but if they had stolen it and murdered somebody, you know, I could have been, you know, I mean, the analogy doesn't go too far, but anyways.
Statute of limitations has run on that.
But I knew. As soon as I got that phone call, I knew. All right.
There is no affirmative defense, then, is there?
Nope. So, right. Is there objection to sustained amendment number two?
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to object. I'm still wrestling with this.
Yep.
And your more liberal instincts, I guess, in this instance. I mean, I'm not going to object to the adoption of the amendment, but I'm going to continue thinking about it, because this one I find somewhat troublesome.
Yeah, and Jason and I are going to draft a fairly elaborate letter to judiciary talking about the very concerns that have come up here. And we've talked with the ACLU, and they were not tracking this bill, and they were...
Thanks.
but interesting, Mr. DiQuinelli, in our brief conversations with them, they said the language that's in this blurs the line between negligent homicide and manslaughter in a kind of a new way, and they said they would be interested. But I'm just telling you that when you get to judiciary here, you may have some fun conversations.
Warren, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. With no objection, Amendment 2 is adopted. We'll move on now to a conceptual amendment number 3. I raised the question with Mr. Dwinelli, if somebody lets a child get exposed to meth and they don't die, but they have permanent mental neurological damage, should we be able to charge them with some kind of an assault, you know, if they don't die? If they die, we can get them for manslaughter. If they don't die, but they've got permanent damage, do we have a criminal action against them? And Mr. Donnelly seems to think that's a valid point and has a suggested amendment for us. Sir.
Under current law, it is a mid-level felony assault in the second degree, recklessly cause serious physical injury to another person. It's a Class B felony. It's one level of felony below the manslaughter that we've been talking about. Serious physical injury is defined in Alaska law as something protracted and long-lasting impairment of a physical condition. And certainly the kinds of overdose effects and long-term effects that we see with some of these drugs would fit within the definition of serious physical injury. So the proposal that I would make in a conceptual way to address the chairman's question would be in the assault in the second degree statute, which is 1141.210, there are three ways to commit it, just as in section 1. There are two ways to commit manslaughter, and I would suggest adding a new subsection. It would be an A4. Patterned after what was done in the manslaughter, and it would be something to the effect of knowingly manufactures or delivers a controlled substance in violation of AS 1171, and a person suffers serious physical injury as a direct result of ingestion of the controlled substance, semicolon, the serious physical injury is a result that does not require a culpable mental state. So it very, very similar to what is in Section 1 in the bill, and that would be a new A4 under 1141.210. And just to sort of complete the entire cycle then, I would assume that the same affirmative defense to prosecution for that would apply to that was just adopted for the manslaughter would also apply to this assault in the second degree. So the affirmative defense amendment would also go along with that.
All right. So, Senator Elton.
As to the affirmative defense component, it would seem to me that this speaks to the issue of it being locked away in a safe spot. I'm thinking, for example, of a child or another person who is in a meth lab and who the fumes.
Through the chair, this particular conceptual amendment that I was referring to was based on my recollection of what you had said at the last hearing, and that is, a comparable assault statute if someone ingests it. I think we're talking about something else again. If just as being in the environment and it's in the environment, that's a slightly different question, and that's to some extent that's addressed in the governor's bill on the, making it in an area where children are likely to reside. But if there's consideration of doing something with that provision, I'd have to kind of rethink this.
And then Dean also. It would seem to me that you for that to happen, you have to kind of have a before and after profile of the person, I would imagine there are times it might be easy to make a case on a before and after profile, but other times it might be difficult.
Through the chair, I think that Senator Elton, I think you're correct on that. I mean, with manslaughter, it's a little easier. They're alive before and they're dead after. With this, and particularly if you're talking about addicts, they may have some of these long-lasting effects already. And so I think that our clearest case is going to be someone who was trying a drug, was early in the stage of drug use, and were able to show that through friends or through their own testimony that they didn't have this injury before and now they do. I mean, for example, let's say they went blind or something else, or there was some sort of mental defect that was caused and that didn't occur. We're just going to have to provide that with testimony, prove that with testimony like we do almost anything else. But I recognize the issue.
Is that the circumstance you were talking about? Where they give it to someone else, or they buy something?
I'm thinking about it. If they have injury something less than death, can we still charge them? Because they cause serious physical harm to someone by distributing, manufacturing, or distributing a controlled substance.
So you're talking about a 16-year-old that might buy this product from a manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. And ends up with serious physical damage. Can we charge the manufacturer or the distributor?
I would suggest just one thing. If they give it to an 8-year-old, I think it's something else. Though when you get to some age of consent or whatever that might be.
I'm sorry, Senator. Well, I'm just going to give an example, and maybe Dean can respond to it. But there are primary, secondary, and tertiary kinds of things that can happen. But, for example, one of these controlled substances might be given to a person. They take it, and then they step into traffic and get injured. I mean, the injury isn't due to the drug, but because of the impaired mental capacity under the influence. I mean, would that be covered in this?
Chair, it would not. I don't believe I think that would be considered an indirect or a collateral injury as a result. It's not the language here is as a direct result of the ingestion. And it was a little bit like the question that was asked at the last hearing about, well, suppose somebody goes, you know, gets drunk, you sell them alcohol, they go out and get drunk, and then they go out and do something. Again, that's it's not as directly as a result of the ingestion. It's the effects of the drug within your system.
Any further question? I'm going to move a conceptual amendment number 3, which amends the code AS 1141-210, adds a new subparagraph A4 that includes second degree assault in this bill with the same language and provisions as the manslaughter one, but for a person that's damaged but does not die, and with the positive defenses, affirmative defenses that were added in 1141-120 as amendment number 2.
That would be 3.
Yeah, amendment number 2 was the affirmative defense, and I'm wanting that same provision provided in as a portion of amendment number 3.
Object to the motion for just to make a suggestion, Mr. Chair. I think I understand where you want to get. I don't necessarily disagree with where you want to get, but a suggestion might be that I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed by the notion and don't totally have my arms wrapped around it. And so the suggestion would be that we include a letter or communication to the Judiciary Committee that may have better training.
Yep.
In this field to consider what you're trying to accomplish.
So are you suggesting we do not do the amendment here and that we
recommend
it to
yeah. That would make me more comfortable. I don't know what makes you more comfortable, Mr. Chair, but that would make me more comfortable.
Yeah, and it would give us time to have it drafted. Okay. I'll withdraw my amendment, and maybe you can work on getting that drafted. All right, so I'll withdraw amendment number 3. All right, is there, do we have anybody that wants to testify today?
No.
All right, any further discussion on SB 70? Chair, I'll entertain a motion.
To report Senate Bill 70 from committee with individual recommendations, and I don't think there's any fiscal notes, are there?
And as amended?
Zero fiscal notes, and yes, thank you, as amended.
Is there objection? Seeing none, SB 70 moves. Thank you, sir. And we are adjourned.